welcome to the Vibrational Voyage radio program. Vibrational Voyage is about exploring the evolution of consciousness and the dynamics of global transformation. My name is Tony McGettigan, and I'll be your host for this journey. This is Tony McGettigan doing an interview with Rohan Solari, the author of EmergentCulture.com. Our discussion begins with something that we both have a great interest in, the work of Joseph Campbell. You're a Joseph Campbell fan as well, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's phenomenal. Yeah, I love Joseph Campbell. And that was very formative for me in the mid-80s.
Yeah, interesting. We have some parallels here because that was when I encountered him too. Mm. And it was formative too. I encountered him during my first crisis, my first life crisis, actually. It was very timely for me to hear his message. And the first book I came across was The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And yeah, it was just what I needed to hear at that time in my life. Mm. And, you know, it was such an emotional period for me that, you know, he's one of the very, well, perhaps the only author who will bring me to an emotional state when I read his words because of the connection at the time that I encountered his incredible wisdom. To this day, he's at the very top. If I have any teachers, I would consider him to be, my greatest teacher.
Well, one of the things that happened in your adventure is you began to study different systems of calendars. And also, then, what I also find very interesting and fascinating in what you write about is the way that you also like to see trends, the way that you see long-term trends and more recent trends. And not only the really difficult and challenging ones, but also those that should give us at least a little bit of encouragement and hope, and that's a lot of interesting stuff that you're doing. I think it's a very interesting synergy. Where would you like to start in this? Want to tell us a little bit about what got you interested in the systems of calendars that you've studied?
Jose Arguelles came out with the Mayan Factor in 1987, and so it must have been that same year when I picked up his book. I think I had picked up Earth Ascending before, so I was kind of clued into some of his work. And then he came out with the Mayan Factor. And at that time, the key word that had provoked my curiosity was prophecy. Hmm. You know, and he had actually pegged a date, 2012.
Okay.
And, you know, and he was talking about tremendous transformation and such. At that time, I had surveyed my surroundings prior to having encountered Jose's work, and some of the things he was saying we could expect to happen as a result of, you know, some very climactic period in history that we were entering. And he was relating it to not just the Mayan calendar, but also different prophetic streams. He said that there was a convergence of prophetic streams from the various traditions. And at that time, you know, as I looked around and saw what was around me, you know, I said, one can project, let's say, whatever's going on in the environment, you know, certain trend. And you take that trend and you project it to a very degree. You say, well, where will that end up? If that trend isn't halted, then where will we end up, you know, if we don't, stop deforestation? Well, we eventually end up without any trees. So I could see at that time on my own that civilization was approaching some sort of climax. I could sense it. I could just see it. And then Jose comes around and says, you know, that there's a convergence of prophecies, and the big year is going to be 2012, when we might expect, you know, some sort of a pivotal point in human history. And so that was what introduced me to the Mayan calendar information, in particular what Jose was saying about the Mayan calendar. And in particular, the very heart of the Mayan calendar, the Zolkin cycle. So that was 1987. And the way Jose introduced it, it was actually very difficult to understand what he was talking about. But whatever it was, it sounded very interesting and very intriguing. But it wasn't until 1999 when I actually decided to investigate the Zolkin in depth. You know, and between that time, you know, I kept track of Jose, and quite frankly, some of the things he was saying, and I thought I was, you know, fairly open in my investigations, but it was almost sounding too New Agey for me. But I was finally compelled in 1999 to look at what he was saying closely. I thought that there was something there that was some missing piece. In my investigations on the nature of reality, one of the things that I'd always wondered is, you know, do we live in a deterministic universe, or is it random? To what degree, you know, are things structured, or you know, what is the nature of reality? And I thought that, based on what he was saying about the Zolkin, that perhaps if it was true, that would fill in a missing piece in my quest to understand the nature of reality, the way humans experience it, not at the, physics quantum level, but at, the way we perceive it here. And so I began my investigations, and I began by tracking it day by day to see if each day is supposed to have X qualities.
Yes.
And so my first task was to see if I could detect the day's events, detect the qualities that were supposed to be there as per the Zolkin.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that for, a number of years, and, it took a while to get just to even think in those terms, because some of the descriptors for the archetypes are very abstract. And, it was very challenging at first to apply the descriptors to events, situations, to see. But gradually over time, I did begin to see how they would manifest as the Zolkin indicated. And it was astonishing because once I got the hang of it, I could see that it was consistent, that the qualities of the day. That this is a red day, and it's a serpent day, and it's this tone. There's three main components to the day. I could detect the particular qualities of the serpent, its attributes in the day's events. Well, see, what makes this all the more challenging is that there's more to a day than just like red three serpent. It's actually what I call a part of a themeplex. And so that means that there are four other components plus the tone that must be looked at. And there's very specific relationships between the central archetype of the day and its accompaniment. You have a guide, you have what's known as the analog or supporting theme, the antipodal or challenge theme, and then what I call the quasi theme, which the quasi theme is both supporting and challenging, and is known as having the power of the unexpected as a result of, because you don't know where it's going to come at you from. And then the tone. And then later I would also learn that the first day of a 13-day cycle, it's theme is propagated across those 13 days. So any event, if it doesn't fit with any of the day's themeplex elements, then it's very likely a tone cycle element. So, it took me, like I said, it was a few years of tracking this before I became convinced that the Zolkin was unfailing in its ability to predict the thematic qualities of each day.
I see.
And that was mind-blowing because what was, you know, what did this mean? It means that reality is structured, defined, deterministic, and follows a very specific sequence of events.
Mm-hmm.
And here's one of the problems that I encountered is that you know we have built-in biases, and there are other ways to test the Zolk'in that do not involve subjective interpretations. Because one of the situations that exists right now in the Maya calendrical world is that there are several Zolk'in counts in use. I think there's at least three, perhaps as many as five. And so that means that either all of them are wrong or one of them is correct.
Hmm.
And what enabled me to verify the José Argüelles account of the Zolk'in is that he introduced a systems architecture. And he specified these different relationships between the archetypes of the, there's a total of 20 archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
And he specified very defined, well-defined relationships and all very well-defined attributes. So with a systems architecture in place, then I could begin to test, you know, it empirically. Like, for example, you know, there's a four color code, it starts blue, white, red, yellow, and there's very specific relationships between those colors. And, you know, one of the things that the Zolk'in predicts, aside from, you know, the thematic quality, is that it also says something about our personalities. So the next thing to do is then apply this to personalities to see if the descriptors match up.
Hmm.
And so I began to decode, you know, people around me. And, you know, it was, again, proving to be valid. Now, what it also predicts is your relationship quality with other people.
Hmm.
Because yellows, for example, if you were born on a yellow day, then, you know, rule of thumb is that yellows have an antagonistic or oppositional relationship with those born on white days. See, so then you could begin to assess that when you encountered, you know, let's say if I decoded somebody's family or mate, you know, I could see then, okay, does it bear out? And so I began to find that indeed the relationships that he specified that would exist between, you know, people born on, or like if you were born on a red day, then red is oppositional to blues.
Yes.
And okay. And then you have the blue-yellow relationship, which is analogous, and those are supportive relationships.
Okay.
So he specified four relationship types that then I could, you know, imply empirically by assessing, you know, like I could decode your family or anybody's family and see where they fall. And according to the system, this is how they should, you know, this should be their interaction among them. And indeed, you know, I found that that was indeed the case. I found that it could predict what our relationship is with anybody. As long as we know what their birthday code is, according to the Zolk'in, then we could assess that aspect.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very interested as well, because there must be great wisdom also in this system that helps you understand how then to address the challenge that you have, the antagonistic relationship that you may have with people who are in a different vibration.
Yeah, you avoid them. Oh, go ahead. Well, that's what I learned. I think at some point, you know, you kind of know what you're messing with, you know, like, that, you know, if I'm in yellow and they're white, okay, well, you know that it's going to be antagonistic. So what do you do?
Okay.
Yeah. Because they are who they are, you know, how that goes. And chances are, you know, that they're going to remain white. You're going to remain yellow because, you know, that's how we were stamped out, so to speak.
And yet, everybody in their expression, in their vibration, they have their definite root, their role. So it seems like there's something that then this unlocks a number of different aspects of our experience and relationships. And So it seems to have a very practical value in what it shows you about the workings of life, the dynamics of existence, your day-to-day living experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, so one is understanding, you know, that everybody is who they are and they're perfectly fine. Whereas we grow up in a culture where, you know, they find every sort of defects, every kind of defect with you if you don't happen to conform to some model, you know, whereas with the Dzogchen, it's like, you know, there's 260 variants of us. You know, there's four basic types: reds, whites, blues, and yellows. Mm-hmm. And then there are 20 variants on that, mm-hmm. multiplied by a thing called a tone cycle, which gives us a total of 260 unique types.
Yes.
And there's, you know, very, you know, specific relationships then between the types. Yeah. And then, you know, so matchmaking, knowing, you know, when it comes to understanding, you know, like if you have a difficult child, well, you know, you look at it, well, yeah, that's just kind of who he is. So now you're just going to have to learn to work with him. He's an introvert. Okay. Like reds tend to be introverted, or in particular mirrors and, or alligators. And so you realize, well, yeah, that's what an alligator or a mirror is. They're introverted. So, you know, you don't try and coax them out. That's, you just accept them for who they are. And you know, if you have a certain relationship, you know that this is going to be the extent of your relationship with them. So you make the best of it.
Okay. That makes sense.
When it comes to the thematics of a day, yes, certain days are indeed better for certain things. Like, for example, the tone cycle, it can get fairly complicated. There's the Dzogchen cycle is itself composed of three sub cycles, a four color cycle, and then a 20 day archetypal cycle, and then what's known as the tone cycle, which is the most abstract cycle, because it seems to indicate a process of development. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, you wouldn't want to get married, you know, once you know the system, you wouldn't want to get married on the second day, on the 10th day, or on the last day of a tone cycle, because those are the most challenging days of a tone cycle. And so, you know, these kinds of things, for example, the last day of a tone cycle is characterized by being exceedingly drawn out. So, you know, already weddings and events, you know, can tend to be, you know, complicated. So why would you compound your experience by having it on the last day of a tone cycle? You wouldn't. So knowledge of that then enables you to pick, you know, what would be an optimum day then to have a certain type of event, a wedding or, you know, something, you know, grand like a wedding. But you can apply this to anything. Like let's say a hiking experience. I wouldn't want to take my kids hiking on the last day because everybody's going to be, you know, we're at low ebb in the energy cycle. Oh. So, you know, you pick a more optimum day for being out.
Okay, that makes sense. So
there's that, and that's, like I said, everything that I'm relating is just, how would I like to put it? I like to put it, you know, like to say that, some say that, you know, you're just scratching the surface. I'm not even scratching the surface of the Dzogchen. I'm just blowing some dust off the surface. Yeah.
Well, I want to get into some of your observations also on cycles and time, but I'd love to come back more into the calendrics, and I'm sure you'll kind of tell us how the trends in time and the calendrics are related. But I have to ask you this, because I enjoy watching the sky. I think actually observing the rise and fall throughout the year of the galaxy overhead, and the patterns of the equinoxes, solstices, the moons, the eclipses. It's a fascinating living pattern. And so that's what I sense that you also participate in through the calendar. It's a fascinating living pattern. So I'm wondering if you have had the opportunity to observe the relationship between celestial events and the calendar?
No, I have not looked into that aspect of the Zolk'in and its relationship to astronomics, in particular, you know, the solar system.
Okay.
What I do know is that the Zolk'in cycle, you know, it's a mystery as to how it was discovered.
Hmm.
But we do know that it seems to be a common denominator within the orbital cycles of the planets of the solar system. In
yes.
other words,
yes,
that
it does.
So many, you know, revolutions, orbits, Venus.
Yes.
Venus-Earth orbits equals, you know, a very round number of Zolk'in cycles. And so it's found within the mathematics when you start to examine the orbital cycles of the planets. You know, for example, the Zolk'in cycle is there's exactly 73 Zolk'in cycles every 52 years. And that's when the solar year and the Zolk'in cycle resynchronize.
Mm.
It takes exactly 52 years, and 52 was, you know, was the most celebrated year in Mesoamerica. It was known as the start of the new fire.
Hmm.
And they had a 13-day jubilee at that time to celebrate, you know, the what's known as the calendar round.
Okay.
So, but to answer your question, no, I'm, you know, with respect to the, you know, it's. And it does have them, but I have not plumbed that that aspect yet.
But it's fascinating for me to hear what you say about the energy of the Zolk'in and the way it helps you navigate your experience, your day-to-day experience. Because I've had very similar experiences with the way the sky talks to me about my day-to-day experience. At times it's certainly day-to-day, but it also speaks to me about long-term progression, long-term trends in experience. It seems that there are definitely long-term trends in our world, in our society. I mean, I think these things are there to be seen. They're self-evident, but it requires a little bit of a focus to see them. So I see them in celestial patterns as well. I see the complement to the long-term trends in our life and experience also going along with what happens in the sky, the patterns in the sky. So it's a very interesting complementary thing that you're observing, and I'm just really enjoying hearing what you have to say about the calendar and how it's something that reveals its qualities in the midst of your attention. You're paying attention and you're seeing how the system, how the energy works. And to me, that's just fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. It's quite magical, because one of the things that you realize is that every aspect of our world is actually orchestrated.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like, you know, again, people kind of get disturbed when they realize that they live in a deterministic universe, but it's really not all that bad, because, you know, I mean, look at, you know, most people have a lot of freedom, so to speak, within this system.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I found that everything is scripted. I mean, down to the silliest details. I mean, you know, for example, like the color of the day, you know, like on a white day.
Yeah.
Okay, white itself takes center stage that day. The color white, you will see that the color white is somehow is more prominent in your field. You might have chosen a white shirt to pick, you know, or you just notice it in the novelty of the day. That's where you detect the codes, is in the novelty of the day, and that's, you know, what makes today different from yesterday.
Okay.
So that's how, you know, down to, again, the colors that you may be encountering that day, you know, you will find that they correspond with the color of the day, you know, per the Zolk'in.
I see. Well, that in itself, I get so excited about things that are self-evident. Now, for these things, we don't need a lot of formal education. Matter of fact, it gets in the way. And I myself have experienced it. I know from a few things that you've said that you've experienced this too. There's a great reliance that we can and should have upon what our own senses reveal to us. And it, you know what? It's the reason I'm mentioning this is because it seems that the heart of this whole thing is learning to become attentive. You have to be able to attend to what's going on both within you and around you in order to see and feel and know these types of connections. So I'm just making an observation, and it's evident in what you're saying, but the reason this is valuable is because this is also the truth for anyone else who would care to check this out. These are things that you can see directly for yourself. It doesn't require belief. What it requires is attentiveness, and then you can start to actually experience this for yourself. I'm wondering if there's some different types of things that you suggest to people who are also learning about the Zolk'in and these types of patterns. What do you usually suggest to people that are learning?
Like as a first step to learning the cycle, to paying attention to the cycle?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know, the very first step is just to acquaint yourself with, like, let's say, you know, the incoming day. You know, we're on the cusp of a white magnetic wind, and you know, where that's kin. Kin means day in Maya. 222. So we're in day 222 of the 260-day Zolk'in cycle, and the day, you know, the day in regards to the Zolk'in begins to phase in late afternoon. I can detect the qualities actually, you know, as they begin to bleed through, usually by mid-afternoon. Hmm. It's well known that the Maya recognize the new day from sunset to sunset. I didn't know that. I discovered, you know, that I could detect the new day qualities coming in, you know, bleeding in the afternoon. And only later, just actually recently, I came across a paper that said that, you know, that right now there are practicing Maya, and that's what they recognize, that the new day starts at sunset.
Okay.
And so the first thing to do is to, you know, to tune into, okay, so what is today? Well, today is X day. And then what are its attributes? Well, these are its attributes. And then to pay attention to, you know, to what goes on the day to see if you can, you know, detect those qualities in your day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it gets a little complicated again because, you know, our day is made up of various themes, not just, you know, one theme. And that's where, you know, you have to know what its complement is. And So that if something comes up, you know, well, this isn't a communication theme, because the wind has to do with communication, spirit, and breath. Hmm. But, you know, you're going to come across half a dozen other different themes, you know, in that same day. And what you'll find is if you know the entire what I call themeplex, then you'll be able to then look at to see if it's a challenge element, an antipodal element, a quasi, or a guiding element. So, again, it gets complicated because it's like, wow, I mean, most people just take for granted, you know, what happens every day, so to speak. They don't pay, you know, we're not used to paying attention to our daily activity. And so, you know, this requires, you know, a fair amount of, like, attentiveness, and as you say. So the first thing is to tune into the primary quality of the day, day after day, and to memorize its attributes. There's only three attributes per archetype. So, for example, the wind is what's coming in for us. Communication, breath, and spirit are the key attributes. So, to start with, you would see if you can detect those three, you know, particular qualities in the day's events.
I see.
And one of the things I learned is that it expanded my understanding of what some of these words can mean. For example, enlightened. Most of us, when we think about enlightened, we tend to think of mental enlightenment,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But what I was tracking, and the enlightenment is the attribute of the 20th archetype, the sun. But I also came to learn that it meant also physical and emotional enlightenment. So, like having a burden lifted or getting a massage. Yeah, that also qualifies as enlightenment.
I like that one very much. The discussion, I just want to mention again, I'm talking with Rohan, who's the author of emergentculture.com, emergent-culture.com. And he's sharing some fascinating observations from his experience. And there's a lot of wonderful articles. I've seen a few and read through them, but everything I've seen so far I've enjoyed. There was one in particular that kind of got my attention. It wasn't the first thing I discovered that got my attention. I'd been there once before, but not long ago I came across something that related to long-term trends in human culture and human society. And I thought it was fascinating, especially when I got more toward the end of the discussion, because it included not only the long-term challenges that we face in the trends that we experience, but also the things that can counteract the destructive forces in the trends that we experience. So would you mind, Rohan, kind of delving into this? I know this is a big area and a whole nother discussion, really, but I'd love to hear what you say about that. And let me also give you the opportunity. Is there something else you want to mention in what we were talking about, the Zolkin? Because that's absolutely fascinating. And I don't want to just jump out of that. Is there anything else you want to kind of touch on with the Zolkin before we get into the long-term trends?
Yeah, I do. I do just want to say one thing, because the Zolkin is really a very difficult subject to convey. In other words, it's. I mean, I would. I'm not being presumptuous, but I think I'm perhaps the only person right now that's writing about the Zolkin with the type of depth that I am.
Okay.
And so that is how new this is. Now, Jose Arguelles came out with the basics on the Zolkin in 1987,
Okay.
1991, when he came out with the Dream Spell. And that's when he actually revealed then the nuts and bolts of it in 1991. Well, between 1991 and now, I don't know of anybody else that's written anything else about the Zolkin, according to his interpretation. So that is how brand spanking new and pioneering my work is. And so so I can't really direct people to any other resource, because it doesn't exist. Jose's work, like I said, he didn't really talk a lot about the Zolkin. He just kind of gave us the nuts and bolts, and then kind of went on to many other different things. And so, I kind of took it upon myself. I said, when I realized, the import that this had for, for human society, if we realized, that this is the fundamental nature of reality, that, everybody should be aware of this, that, then I go, I need to elaborate on his message, because he just introduced the nuts and bolts, and the subject is so complicated and potentially convoluted that, I felt that I felt like I wanted to then make this as intelligible, and to also relate it to Western science as much as I could, so that, it didn't seem like we're talking about just some other dimension that nobody else was could perceive. Nobody else discovered this. Somebody, thousands of years ago discovered this cycle. Jose, his work was enormous in just restitching and rediscovering the correct sequence, because again, there's four other sequences. Somehow he was able to put the pieces together and match up with the correct sequence again. So that was an epic feat of itself, just to do what he did. But I just want to say, yeah, that the Zolkin is very new in terms of its elaboration, and that nobody else at this point is discussing and elaborating upon the Dzogchen, or offering the type of empirical evidence that I am, to set it on a firm foundation, not as a belief system, but as a phenomena of nature.
Yeah, I get you. Get you. And so again, it's experiential. It's something that which is self-evident. I have very similar perspective myself. If something's really worthwhile, if it's somehow resonant with the truth, then it doesn't require me to explain it. I can point to it, but ultimately, individuals would experience it for themselves. So it looks to me like what your work does is exactly that. It's pointing in a attentive way toward the workings that are going on, and we must and can experience them for ourselves.
Yes, and one of the things that's difficult about the Dzogchen, especially in our lightning-paced society, is that nobody's going to track the Dzogchen to verify this for themselves. So I have very quick and easy ways of showing people that this system is bona fide, to provoke the curiosity.
Oh, very good.
To investigate it at a much deeper level, which again, it usually just involves decoding. Uh-huh. Like I could decode somebody's family and then show the relationships. So I have empirical methods to share with the public that will provoke the curiosity to say, yes, this is definitely something that is worthy of my investigation.
Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated to hear the particular details and your experience. That's one of the things that I really enjoy, and that's what my program on the radio has been about, getting people to reflect on and share their experience, the wonder of it, sometimes the great challenge of it. But you are a wonderful example because you have a rather rich insight and experience as a result of what you've been paying attention to. So it's a rare and wonderful thing to get your words and your presence and your feelings about what you observe in this and what you sense and what you find to be self-evident for you in the process. So I want to thank you very much for that, but we're not done yet. I just wanted to acknowledge you and thank you for that because it's fascinating.
You're most welcome.